Hello, this is Best Practice, RN's management show. I'm Richard Ady, and this is Fred Astaire.
You like potato, and I like patata. You like tomato, and I like tomato. Potato, patata, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
I've lost count of the number of articles I've read on the difficulty of managing Generation Y, also known as the Millennials. To be honest, I haven't bought it. Partly it's the age range, 23 to 35. It encompasses huge differences in experience, expertise, and stage of life. How can that be a meaningful group? And partly it's that the complaints about millennials sound like complaints about young people. They have high expectations. They get bored easily. They zone out. Well, that's what we did too. But it turns out that I was wrong. It does make sense to group 23-year-olds and 35-year-olds together. And they are different to generations that have gone before. Carl Moore from McGill University in Montreal.
People over 45 with a university degree, yourself and myself, Richard, were taught a modern worldview. The people under 35 with the university degree have been taught a postmodern worldview. So they simply have been taught a different way of looking at the world. And if we understand that worldview and the assumptions behind it, we understand younger people, the generation that is coming up now in terms of the workforce, much better, and we can work with them more effectively.
So when you say a postmodern worldview, are you meaning they don't buy the absolutes that we were taught?
Absolutely. So modern, the things that I grew up with, some of the ideas of modern that you might be familiar with from the 60s and 70s was a famous cover of Time magazine, 1967, God is Dead. So I was kind of taught back in high school and in uni that the idea of God, of Islam would be done by the 80s and Christianity by the 90s. They would have flatlined. But there's a book that came out recently by John Micklethwaite, ex-economist, and Adrian Woolworth, who writes for The Economist today, still called God is Back. And what they argue, Adrian is an atheist, John is a good Catholic, so they have a foot in both camps, is that actually the idea of God didn't go away. It came back with considerable force, and we see that around the world for good and for bad. So a number of the ideas around modern thought simply failed, and so postmodern is post-after modern, was a new way of viewing the world based on the fact is that the approach that I was taught failed to a considerable degree.
So they were actually taught differently or their lives have turned out so different that they now have this essentially different take on the world.
Well, they were taught different views on truth and the nature of who has truth, the nature of hierarchy. So those are important things from a leadership viewpoint. But it's also all this is put on steroids by the world they live in, particularly social media. So one of the interesting points we see is that millennials love feedback. Three reasons why they love feedback is because they grew up with video games, which gives you a lot of feedback. I see my son playing them. He gets feedback all the time. You also grew up with social media increasingly is a big part of their life where, you know, and it's sad, I do it sometimes myself. How many likes did I get on Facebook? Things like that. But you're looking for feedback and you get it very, very quickly indeed. And then in North America, maybe in Australia, helicopter parents to some degree among millennials. And so they grew up in a world of getting feedback. And when they go to work, they want that feedback as well because of the nature of the worldview they were taught and the world they grew up with around social media and video games and helicopter parents.
So they have this postmodern worldview, which is more about challenging authority and accepted norms than the way I grew up. And they need a lot of feedback. So I guess that presents a different set of challenges for managing them.
Oh, absolutely. And something where, you know, one of the first chapter is kind of a more practical chapter we're in the midst of finishing off now is saying is that you got to listen to them. So talk less, listen more. And kind of stepping back, it's the death of meta-narratives and the rise of micro-narratives, to put it in English literature terms. So meta-narratives were big story meta that explained everything. So you go back to communism, the way it explained all of human history, or kind of raw meat capitalism the Tea Party in the U.S. still believes in, the idea of the invisible hand ruling, and that's the only thing we should pay attention to. These kind of big meta stories went away and have been replaced by micro-narratives, little stories that they are taught, and they believe that their story is almost as good as my story, even though I'm a professor and older than them and so on, and written a number of books on leadership, they still believe their story is almost as good as mine. Now, when I was young, I would not challenge a professor to the same degree they do, but they do it very comfortably, and I think rightly so, actually.
Let's just unpack that, Carl, because that's really interesting.
Sure.
I can remember being a young journalist, and I had done a degree, and I'd done my journalism training, and I went into a newsroom, and it was so made clear to me so quickly that I actually did not know anything, and I didn't know what I was doing. And I'd be better on if I asked questions, but apart from that, shut up and did what I was told. And although I thought that some of those guys were idiots, I learned a lot from them.
Well, we learned a lot from them, as we should have. Now, part of it is that the world was less changing back then to some degree. And therefore, their experience 10 or 15 years before as junior journalists was still relevant. But when I look back, I worked for IBM for a number of years in sales. My experience there is almost entirely, not entirely, but almost irrelevant for today's world of IBM. How I sold, it's very different today. We also look at a more turbulent environment outside our organization. So in most industries, organizations have got to change more rapidly than they have in the past. You look at the own media that you're in, we have incredible impact of social media in terms of how we do things. So the world we live in is changing. Therefore, as a senior person, I have less relevant experience. I've got to listen more to young people than I used to. So in very practical terms, talk less, listen more, because it's the right thing to do. Not only emotionally do they want it, but you and I have a lot more to learn than the older people had to learn from us.
I'm just going to push back a bit more on this because there's a couple of other things. One is expertise. Expertise is not something that you acquire overnight, especially in anything where there are craft skills. They take years to get. That can't be rushed, and you can't arrive as a 25, 26-year-old and know all the stuff that somebody 10 or 15 years older than you know.
No, absolutely, and that's a fair point, and I would agree with that. But when you look at a world of, let's say, in business, Uber or Google or Amazon.com, these sorts of things, the things we knew in, for example, retailing, that we knew as a truth 20 years ago are less and less true today because retailing's evolved so much. So therefore, some of the things, the profound lessons I learned, I've got to throw over the side of the boat. I interviewed a guy named General Martin Dempsey, who just stepped down as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the most senior general in the world. In the U.S., certainly, saying the things he learned as a tank commander in the Cold War were great lessons that were very compelling in his 20s. But as he became a general in Desert Storm, he had to throw them over the side of the boat because a number of the lessons weren't relevant in the world of Desert Storm, but had been so compelling back in the Cold War. The challenge is, and when I do as the executive audience, I ask them to discuss for a few minutes, what are three things they've had to throw over the side of the boat? And they do come up with things that were great, profound lessons that are just no longer true today.
Okay, let's talk about what this means for this generation. So you've already mentioned the feedback, and I completely get it. And perhaps in a moment we'll explore how to do that, because there's obviously ways of doing that. What about things like chain of command or who's in charge? How do we deal with that?
There's still, the good news is they still accept some authority from more senior people like you and I, Richard. But I remember going to a doctor as a kid, and it'd be a man back. We now have more medical students at McGill than men, but back then it was a man. He had a white coat on. He would have a stethoscope, sign of authority, and he would sit behind a desk you could land an aircraft on. He was God with a small g, and we were just people that would listen to him with bated breath and do what he said. Today, I go to a doctor. It's now a woman. She doesn't have on a stethoscope, no signs of authority, not even a white, coat anymore. She sits in a chair beside me, and I say to her, "Doc, I've Googled what's wrong with me, and I have three theories. What do you think?" So there's much less hierarchy, much more diffuse sense of who has knowledge with doctors than in the past. So something where hierarchy is declined considerably in the minds of millennials. Now, the good news is, if I listen to them as the senior person, they're happy to let me decide. They're happy to, because I'm the one who's paid to do that. I have more experience. I developed my craft, as you point out, over many years. They're accepting my authority if I listen to them. But if I don't listen to them, I'm a jerk. What they're saying is some of what you know is no longer relevant in today's world. And we actually know some things you don't. So they reverse mentor us. So, for example, social media, they get that world in a way that I don't, even though I'm on Twitter and do those sorts of things. It's the world they live in. They also reverse mentoring about what is the latest trends, what's cool, what's in. I'm just not as cool as they are, but that's the world. It's sad at times, but that's the world they live in. And they tell me about, hey, the cool restaurants, the music, what's in and what's out. So there's a sense of they actually know some things I don't in a way that's very relevant compared to when I was young.
Okay, well, let's talk specifics about the feedback, because you think there are particular ways of doing this that will work best with this group.
Well, when you look at feedback, it's going to be different than in the past because they grew up loving feedback and experiencing it. What they want is feedback much more frequently. So you and I have probably had a number of annual reviews, and generally it was disliked by both people on this, on each side of the table. It's something you didn't look forward to, you didn't enjoy being part of, or giving them to other people. What millennials want is feedback much more frequently. What they'd like me to do is say, here's something that you can improve on. Here's something you could get a little bit better at, because they do want to improve, they do want to get better, and that's great from a viewpoint of the organization and me as their manager. And they want that feedback right away, and they want it specific in detail rather than vague generalities. So as a manager, I used to spend maybe 10% of my time when I had other people presenting thinking about what feedback do I give them. Today, I'm thinking it's more like 25, 30% of the time as a manager. I'm thinking about what feedback will I give to Sienna when we leave the room after her presentation and share that with her. Now, an interesting thing here is that they sometimes push back. They disagree with the feedback and argue with me, which I would have never done in my day, but they're often right. And I have to have the humility to go, you know, that's a fair point. Maybe I looked at it wrong. One of the other things which has been interesting is the need or the desire for millennials for more purpose at work, that our organization is doing something beyond just producing products. So I have the CEO of L'Oreal Canada come to class every year. And one of the questions I warn him, and he sees it coming because I'll ask it every year, is say, hey, Frank, you're selling cosmetics. How do you get millennials excited and anyone excited about that? And he goes on at some length talking about other programs they have, the good they're doing for the environment, how they're developing people, where there's a sense of purpose beyond just making money. Where in my lower moments at IBM, I must admit I was focused on how much money I made, what kind of car I drove, and how nice my suit was.
Okay, so I just want to recap, Carl. Much more feedback, much more, not a, quite a meeting of equals, but two-way respect, much more being prepared to deal with pushback, much more kind of working with rather than managing down in the way that I came up with, and more sense of purpose. What happens if you don't give the millennials these things?
Well, if it's a tough economy, they may just hang in there, but they're much more apt to move on. And now that's part of their career path. That's an interesting one. You had on one of your shows recently from London Business School, Linda Gretton, talking about the 100-year life and a longer career. And that was a very good point she made about how if you're going to have, you know, a 70-year career, there's going to be a lot more different paths in there. So millennials just, that's the way they see it, that they're not going to have one company. They're not going to work 45 years anywhere for any organization. They're going to have multiple careers and multiple employers within those multiple careers is just what they see. So the challenge is more what McKinsey's called the war for talent. Now, in a tough economy, they calm down just out of necessity. And part of this is just getting older. As they start marrying and having kids and having a mortgage, that does focus the mind. Putting those things aside, if you don't give the things they're looking for, you're less apt to be able to hire them and keep them, and that costs the company a lot.
It certainly does. Carl, it's been really interesting. Thank you very much for joining me today.
A real pleasure, Richard. I enjoy your show.
Associate Professor Carl Moore is at McGill University, and his book, which comes out later in the year, is Leading, Managing, they're both crossed out, Working with Millennials the Way They Want to Be Worked With. This is Best Practice on RN, on your radio, online, and via podcast. I'm Richard Ady.
Do you guys have Barramundi here?
This is Mike and Timothy.
Potato scallops.
The unlikely hosts of a new RN podcast. It's called The Real Thing.
Oh, mama, you skipped over too high.
Stories.
Intimate stories, scenes, characters, places.
Born of Australia.
We're heading out into the corners to find the real Australia.
The Real Thing.
That's us.
Subscribe now.